The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything.
All right, real quick. I don't have a lot of time here. Farrell on the bench. I was looking at, okay, so their averages, it's 8-3 now, but they had two guys on with one out. They could have done more damage, but I still think this game's over. Rosarena's obviously hitting .382 in the postseason. He's been incredible. He's not even in this conversation. He's the only guy that hits. Margot's hitting .256. He just had another hit. Choi's hitting .290. But from what I'm seeing, he's not even playing. He's not even playing. He's had, I'll get into the at bats. That's another thing. Wendell is hitting .225. Zunino, the catcher, .216. Kiermaier hit a home run tonight. He's hitting .194. You're hitting .194 and you hit a home run. That guy can't even hit .200. I won't deny he hit a home run. I won't deny he plays good in the outfield, but he cannot hit. Even though he hit a home run tonight, when you're hitting .194 in the postseason, you suck. Brandon Lau, .115 in the postseason. Are you kidding me? It makes me stutter. I mean, I just absolutely stammer when I hear that. Like, I completely freak out because how do you hit .115? I can hit .115. And then Adames is awful. He's a great, shortstop. That's what everyone loves. They're always talking about. He's got the smile on his face. He's like the team cheerleader. Nicest kid ever. Everybody loves him. Yeah, I don't like his .132 average. The guy can't hit he couldn't hit the ocean from the beach. Every time he's up, it's an automatic out. Brousseau, .222. Meadows. How about this guy, Austin Meadows? No wonder the Pirates gave up on him. He's hitting .114. That's worse than Lau. Yandy Diaz hitting .125. Renfro hitting .200. The Japanese player, Susugo, hitting .154. They won't even let him on the field. He hits so bad. He's not even allowed to touch the field.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
So someone asked on the church, they said, well, if they're so bad, why'd you bet on them? And I said, I bet on the pitcher and I bet against a pitcher. Right. So I bet on Glasnow and against Kershaw really was what my thinking was on the bet tonight. But here's the deal. I've hit 13 of the last 16 baseball playoff games documented. So, you know what you can do. Think hard. Think hard of what you can do. What do you think you could do in terms of what I want you to do right now? I'm sure you'll figure it out. So here's the deal. I don't get every game right, but I'll take 13 out of 16 every day. Thanks, ma'am. Appreciate you. Have a nice day. All right, so here's my point, Carver High. Obviously, people don't understand, apparently, this isn't about like anything other than the facts. The facts are simple, right? Like these guys absolutely do not hit. They're hitting 209 as a team. Their opponents are hitting almost 300 against them. So we talk about their great pitching and defense, but teams are hitting 295 against them in the postseason. Explain to me, Carver High, if you even can try to explain it to me, how can a team hit 209 and have that many guys that I went through the litany of guys hitting in the 100s from to Sugo, the Japanese player, to Diaz, Meadows, Adames, Lau, Kiermaier, all hitting in under 200, all of them. And then the rest of them, Wendell, 225, Zunino, 216, Renfro, 200, Rousseau, 222, and he barely gets at-bats, barely at all, any at-bats, Rousseau. So, because they play Lau,
yeah. And Rousseau's the second base. Rousseau usually pinch hits in like the sixth or seventh and then plays defense the rest of the
right.
game.
Okay, so explain to me how in God's name, in the entire postseason, with that many at-bats and everything else, and that many games, that you as a team hit 209 and opponents hit almost 300 against you, and yet you make the World Series?
Well, they don't have a lot of hits, but like I said, the couple that they've gotten are with a couple of guys on base, and they've also hit a lot of home runs. So even though those averages are low, the few hits that they have, they're making them count. You know, there's guys that have hit homers. I mean, you look at just
25
tonight,
homers.
They've hit a bunch of homers, and you combined the home runs that they've hit with how good Arozarena has been. Because you look, he had 21 hits coming into this series. The next closest guy had 10. So right. He's carried a lot of the offense as well, and their pitching and defense has been so good that when Arozarena hits a homer and they score a couple runs and they get a couple of key hits after a few walks, that's usually enough for them when they win to win their games.
So Arozarena
has like tonight.
Arozarena has 10 RBIs. Margot actually has 11 RBIs. Zunino, the catcher, has 8 RBIs. Renfro, the right fielder, has 6 RBIs. Those are your primary RBI guys in the postseason.
Look at Zunino. How many homers has Zunino got in the playoffs?
Four.
He's got 4 homers, and how many hits does he have? Out of all his hits, he probably has what? 8 hits? 7
3
hits.
How is so that possible?
No, I mean, he's got 3 aside from the homers. So he's got 7 hits in the playoff. 4 homers and 3 singles or something like that. That's the thing. More than half of Zunino's hits have been home runs. He's made them count. So that's where you get into those situations.
Yeah, I don't. No. Renfro has 1 home run. So he has 3 hits in the postseason. 1 home run. I'm talking about Renfro. You're talking about Zunino, right?
Zunino,
so
yeah.
Zunino has 8 hits,
yeah,
and
half
4
of
home runs
half
and 8 RBIs. So there you go.
They make their hits count. They make their hits count. The few hits that they have, they are taking advantage of it. But when you give up 8 runs like they have tonight, and you don't hit as well as they do, it's a recipe for disaster for them. So they're going to need to tomorrow. The Dodgers are going to throw you some kind of a bullpen situation, whether it's Gosselin and May or whoever they're going to throw out there. They're not going to have Buehler till game 3. The Rays need to make their hits count while they have Snell on the mound and all their best arms rested now. They're not using any of their big guys today. No Anderson, no Castillo, none of these other guys. So they're going to have Snell and the full complement of their best arms tomorrow. Tomorrow's a game, Scotty, that the Rays, if they're going to win this series, I think they got to win tomorrow.
So if they, do you think the Dodgers are going to start May and or do you think they're going to start Gonsolin in terms of they're going to use a opener and just use a guy for, you know, a couple innings? Is that their plan, to use both of them?
I think that they might use both of them and just go short and then use them both again in 4 and go back to Kershaw in 5. Like, having the days off in this series now makes it a little bit more manageable to do these things. Whereas in the last week, when you had to play 7 days in a row, it was a little bit more chaotic trying to get your pitching in order. But when you know now you're going to play tonight and you're going to play Wednesday, you're not playing on Thursday. So, and it just gives yourself, they could do May 2 innings, Gosselin 2 innings tomorrow, things like that, because they're not using their big guys today either. Right? I mean, they're not using Urias. They're not using Trinan. They're not using any of their good guys. So they're going to have that in the hole tomorrow too.
Do you feel I got to tell you, the way that, Betts is playing, he did all these big things when he got the walk and then the 2 stolen bases and the go, the first run of the game and all that, or whatever it was. I think Bellinger hit a 2-run homer, right? And then he scored the 3rd run. So all I know is when that guy has a game like that, they're not losing. And they seem to be absolutely raking the ball ever since game 4 of the NLCS. So game 5, 6, and 7 and game 1 of the World Series. So this is 4 straight games where they've basically torn the cover off the ball and they've hit home runs and everything else. I mean, they look literally they look tonight. Like, you never know what could happen. It could all change tomorrow. It could all change over the next couple games. Next thing you know, it could be we're talking about something else entirely, and we flip the script and we're talking about, oh my God, what's happened to the Dodgers bats, like from game 1 when they were so hot, and then the Rays get hot. You never know. But the reality is, when you're looking at it tonight, when you are watching these two tonight, I mean, the Dodgers, I know it's only one game, but they look so superior to the Rays when they're batting. You know what I mean? When they are up, every guy, almost every guy in that Dodger lineup is someone you could have a problem with getting the ball past them. Like, they just have great at bats, and every guy in the lineup hits. Every single guy, the catcher rakes, Will Smith, I mean, whatever. They have all these guys that are just Taylor. All of them are difficult to get the ball by. And I know that Glasnow had whatever, 8 Ks, whatever it was, but they still have really good at bats. Even when they strike out, they're like hard to strike out. You know what I mean? They just, it's either that they walk, they get on base, and you've seen everything, doubles, home runs, you name it, stolen bases. That lineup is so much more dangerous than the Rays. Carver Hyde's not even funny.
Well, yeah. And that's the difference where, you know, we've been talking for weeks and even the last 2 days leading up to this, the payroll difference, right? Look at the high profile, high money names that are on the Dodgers compared to what the Rays are going to roll out there, and they're hitting. You know, it's not too much different than what the Rays faced 2 weeks ago. They played the Yankees, right? Yankees have big money, you know, names up and down the lineup, but what's the difference? They didn't hit. They haven't hit in the playoffs. Right now, this Dodgers, Bellinger's locked in, Seager's locked in, Betts having an all-world night tonight. Their big money players are making it happen. And sometimes when you have that much talent, if everybody's going to hit, I don't care how great Tampa is with the charts and graphs, it's going to overflow them, and they're going to lose.
So let me ask you this question. So this is 3 out of 4 years to the World Series. Do you think Betts is the difference? Because it didn't matter who they put on that team.
Yeah, I thought that getting Betts was going to be the difference for them this year.
And now they got him, and look what's happening. Like, and they are just showing him over and over and over and over and over again because he's done so many things tonight on the base pass and at the plate and you name it. And then what he did in the NLCS with his glove was unreal.
Hey, everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carver High, you got it all figured out, don't you?
I got a lot figured out. Believe me, I got plenty figured out. I know everything that's going on.
All right, so let's talk about Tua. So Tua Tagovailoa obviously has been named the starter of the Fins, and the Dolphins play the Rams in 2 weeks. So the one thing I said today on Coast to Coast was the same thing you've kind of been talking about with me is that if you remember on the show today, I was like, his first game is going to be against Aaron Donald? I'm like, what Real are you smart. Doing? Like, I don't understand what they're doing. Like, so I'm not questioning anybody's brilliance or, some NFL team making decisions. All these, I got to be honest with you, there's a lot of hosts and shows and people that do this for a living that'll, analyze every team and just, they're never wrong. And they're just so genius about these teams, like how decisions that should be made in sports. And I'm not that guy. Right. I really am cool and I'm not that guy. I'm not the dude that thinks he knows everything. Like I know more sports than you. I'm not that guy. But I will tell you that I questioned the move from a standpoint of just for me, like, how do you know what I said? I said, first of all, he's going to be running for his life against this guy, Aaron Donald, to try to kill him. Second of all, my thing is you're a half game out of the lead in the division. You win the division, you're a playoff team. How in God's name, when everything's going right and you're winning, what are you doing when you have something working? You never, never, ever in sports, you ever change it when it's working, right? Like it's working right now. Everything's working. They're playing great football. They look great against the Niners. They look great against the Jets. I don't care who you play. When you look good and you win, that's all that matters. And then you're telling me you're going to bench this guy that's got you to this point and go with Tua. Now, I know everybody wants to see him, Carver High. I do, too. And I was excited to see him the other night play the, four snaps or whatever, five snaps, whatever it was. He handed off. He threw it twice. He completed two short passes, and then it was over. The game was over. Then after the game, he sat on the field and looked around and had his moment. And then now they've named him the starter, and they have a bye this week. They play the Rams next week. You cannot tell me that you agree with – why would you stop now what you have going and you're rolling? Everything's going great, and Fitz is having a blast. He's never looked better, and he's taught this kid so much. And why can't you just wait till they're two games out of the lead and it's over and they still got six or seven games left? You let the kid play those six or seven and not let him pick up with a half game trail in the division. And then his first game is against an absolute killer. The guy's got like seven sacks. He's going after quarterbacks like they're lunch meat, and they're going to put this kid in there. And remember, and I think he's 100% healthy and a fabulous athlete. Do not question his talent. I do not question his potential and future. But I will say this. He broke his hip, okay? So he had massive surgery, rebuilt it all. You're going to put him out there against a guy that absolutely, I think they don't feed him. Like, I don't think he's fed. He's not allowed to eat all week. And then on Sundays, they put a giant like table filled with 30 steaks and 12 pizzas on a in an oven right near the stadium. And they say, this is all yours if you can hit the quarterback seven times. And then the guy goes out. It's like that James Harrison commercial. He ain't getting paid unless he tackles the guy. And then he tackles the guy and ruins the guy's life. That's Aaron Donald. He's Ferguson from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's rabid. He's like a dog with rabies, right? Carver High, explain it to me. Why would you play this kid now in that situation? Or is he going to go out and light up the Rams and then steal the NFL the rest of the season before our very eyes and make me look like an idiot?
Yeah, I don't particularly agree with the decision, but I can give you a couple of thoughts, I think, on why they're thinking now is the time. Like, I don't think facing Aaron Donald is the best situation to do this in. But here's the few things. One, you're on the bye this week. So, we're going to give him 2 weeks to prepare with the first team and give you all that stuff. I know it's whatever. I'm giving
He'll
you the
have
reason.
Nightmares.
But you like it or not, these are the probably the theories of why they're doing it now. And the second one is, Scotty, I think that Flores went into this season and he kind of looked at it as my team as a whole is going to improve. They're going to get better from last year. I have this kid. I want to play him, but I don't want to rush him. I have Fitzpatrick to start. Maybe he was waiting for a moment where he knows his team is good enough now where they can support playing a kid like Tua. Whereas the Dolphins were not very good last year. They eventually got a little better as the season went on. And now this year they've won a couple games. Offensively and defensively, they look like a better team. Maybe he says, my team's getting better. Let me now put the kid in and see if they can become even better than that. Because Fitzpatrick's done what he's done. Tua has more talent, and he's the future. So let me take this team that I think has gotten to a level where I can trust them and that the kid can go in there, and I think he's going to be safe because the other guys are playing well. And let me see if now I can take this team to another level by putting the kid in a quarterback. That's where I think maybe they're looking at it as. I know that there's only such a ceiling that Ryan Fitzpatrick has. Like, we know it. We've seen it for years. You know, it gets only so high, and then it eventually comes crashing down. So Flores might look at it and go, my team's playing real high right now. I know Fitz can only do so much. Maybe I put the kid in, and if he's as good as we all know he is right away, that team can now soar to even higher. That's where
So Herbert and Burrow are playing every week, yes. And what's happening to them? They're losing. And so I don't care how good Herbert's looked, he always ends up losing. It's amazing. They just destroy everybody for three quarters, and then they lose the game, right? They're like the Falcons. You know, not as bad, but they lose. Burrow's been hit so many times, he's going to need a therapist.
But his team flat out sucks.
Do you think the kid will win?
Garbage.
You think the kid will win? Do you think he's going to win? Because I don't think he can do better than Fitzpatrick.
I have been skeptical, obviously, of him this year because of the injury last year. I've been very skeptical of Tua. But you're not going to know until he gets out there. I mean, we can sit here and have him, you know, watch him with a clipboard on the side. Until he actually gets in the game, we don't know if he's fully recovered from that injury. We don't know if he has the same mobility. We don't know if he could do all the same things. So until we see him get out there, it's either going to, you know, look bad, or he could be great like he was at Alabama, and suddenly the Dolphins become, you know, maybe a 500 team, a 7-9 team, and if he's good enough with the offensive pieces that they have, maybe the Dolphins become even better than they were with Fitzpatrick. The time's going to tell here. He's rolling the dice. There's no doubt about it, because the team is coming off a couple of really good wins. But I think I see what he's trying to do. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but I see what he's trying to do.
Well, fair enough. But do you think that based on what you've seen in the past, when they do it like this, when something's going well and something's working, and then you tinker with it, and mess with it, which is, this is what they're doing.
Yep.
They're messing with what's been working.
Yep.
Does it usually turn out well?
Well, there's one case that a lot of people have brought up today, which was the Giants with Eli Manning and Kurt Warner. So in Eli's rookie year, the Giants were 5-4. Kurt Warner was the quarterback. And at that moment, when they were 5-4, Coughlin made the switch. and he put Eli in, and the Giants were awful the rest of the season, and Eli had to, a lot of growing pains. But they did that at a point where the team was above 500. Warner wasn't happy about it, but that's when Coughlin decided to put Eli in. He felt the team got to a point where, it was time for Eli to play. So that's a situation where he got Eli experience, or he got the young quarterback experience, but he took a team that had a winning record, and they didn't win a lot of games the rest of the year. So, it is a roll of the dice. It really is.
Well, it sure is. But do you think that, let me ask you this question. Do you think that, because I think there might be some of this going on too, where they actually realize in their meetings with their, coaching staff and front office, where they have to at least have conversations where I believe that somebody says, look, we are not going to win the Super Bowl this year. We are not there yet. We are,
yes.
We are several steps away from that.
That's
happening.
A truthful conversation.
So yeah. there's at least, what are they going to have? How many, cause there's extra playoff teams now this year, it's going to be seven or something like that.
Right.
So anyway, they're going to have, right. Isn't that right? There's going to be extra playoff teams.
Yes. There's an extra one in each conference this year.
Okay. So there's going to be seven as opposed to six.
Correct.
So yes. They're not going to be, unless a miracle, even if they were to win the division, even if they somehow miraculously won the division and they got in the playoffs, they're still losing in the playoffs. They're not going to win. They're not even, in my opinion, they'd be lucky if they won a wild card game. They're not winning some, AFC title game appearance. Right. It's not happening. So I think at some point they might sit around and go, look, the best we could do is miraculously get a wild card or win the division and then go lose a playoff game and it'd be over anyway. Why not just play the kid? And next year is what we're all about. Let's just let him lose, let him play, and then next year we'll go for it.
Would you rather you get him in there now, and if things go well, he gets to play 10 NFL games, no matter how they go, whether they go 5-5, 3-7, maybe if they get lucky 6-4, who knows how they go. And you give him that experience now while you think that your team is on the rise, so that way, by the beginning of next year, you know that he's ready to take that team to the next step, and you add pieces and you do stuff like that. That's why you do it now.
Yeah. So there you go. We'll talk about Kyler Murray next. Couple things I wanted to talk about before we get out of here tonight was one, Kyler Murray, and two, Carver High, if you can remember, that the Lomachenko, story after the fact is getting crazier by the minute. It's like he had surgery on his shoulder, right? Now he's had, he was injured in the fight.
He's not saying he was injured before the fight. He's saying he was injured in the fight, right?
In the fight. So
I don't want to hear that's why he didn't fight well. I don't want to hear that.
Well, he had surgery on it in 2018. So it's the same, I guess, unless I'm mistaken, it's the same shoulder. And it got re-injured in the fight in like the fourth round, something like that. I could be wrong. And they and then when it was over, he had surgery, I think Monday, I could be wrong, but I know he had surgery. I think it was yesterday, but he's, now he's going to be fine, whatever they're saying. He'll be in, PT rehab, whatever. But the reality is that his corner and his manager, right, the people that run his career, his manager said today that he was infuriated by Judge Julie Letterman scoring the bout 119-109. Quote, does she need to be suspended for life from judging boxing matches? That's my question. End quote. This Aegis Clemus said about her card, which gave Lomachenko only one round of the fight. He said that his team had objections to Letterman being selected for the fight. They asked for any judge from California where Lomachenko trains and New York, where Lopez was born, to be excluded from consideration to avoid regional bias. Letterman hails from New York. When made aware of those comments, Bob Bennett, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, defended the decision for Letterman and the other judges, Tim Cheatham and Steve Weisfield, to work the fight. They're there based on performance. If you look at the criteria of the different fights those judges have judged since the pandemic, you'd find that they have performed exceptionally well within the closed system of events. The fact that Julie comes from the same state as Teofimo is not an acceptable reason to disqualify her, having no vested interest in who wins whatsoever. And then Top Rank's Bob Arum also was vocal in his criticism of her scoring, telling the Athletic that Lopez won 7-5 is the way I scored it. I can see 8-4, but you can't score it 11 rounds to one and say you watched the fight. 9th, 10th, 11th weren't close. I would advise any fighter that I have to ask for the commission not to appoint Julie Letterman. Boy, they're just slamming her up and down.
She probably had the closest card to the real thing, let's be fair. That guy didn't deserve to win that fight at all. I mean, at all.
I agree. I agree that the fight was not 119, 110. I agree with that. But look, let's face facts. You know, I watch millions of fights. It was 119, 109. I've been to a million fights. I've seen a million fights, and I've scored a million fights. I thought that there's no doubt in my mind that you could have scored Lomachenko the, you know, at least the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. Okay? So he lost the 12th, and he lost the first 6-7 rounds. And that's that. It was real simple. There's no way that fight was 119-109. Absolutely no way was it 11-1. But there is no doubt in my mind, even at worst, because she's saying he won one round. And then at worst, you cannot tell me under any circumstance, at the worst, it'd be 10 and 11. He won those two. He won those two automatic. So if she says he won one round, it has to be one of those, right? Well, he won more than one, because he definitely, in my opinion, won 8, 9, 10, and 11. I thought he won four rounds of the fight, and that was that. This isn't complicated. But no. My point is that he had shoulder surgery and now is saying essentially that the fight, you know, the bottom line was that he felt that he couldn't fight in the fight because of the shoulder.
Yeah, sure.
So when he arrived in the States to prepare for the fight, he said in Ukraine, he felt sharp pain in his right shoulder. We took him right away to see the doctor. 6 weeks before the fight, he was given an injection and alerted the Anti-Doping Association and the Nevada Commission. We lost 1 week of training. We lost 1 week of sparring because the doctor forbid him to do much for a week after the injection. He said a few weeks later that the pain flared up during a sparring session and was given another injection. His dad said he would not withdraw from the fight and made it clear to his team that if he dropped out, he would retire. So the bottom line is that they are saying that he was injured.
They're saying it's beforehand. So they're doing that. They're pulling a Pacquiao. They're pulling a Pacquiao Mayweather. They're saying that he was hurt before the fight and it affected his performance. Well, then you shouldn't have fought. All right. If you go in the ring, okay, if you go in the ring and fight, that's it. There's no excuses that you couldn't get in the ring. You get hurt during the fight is one thing. If you're going into the ring, you're ready to fight. I don't want to hear about all this after the fact.
Right.
I had injections 6 weeks ago. I did all this. I'm sorry. That dude got his ass beat. Right? I watched it. He did nothing. Like you said, the first 7 rounds, he stood there and he did nothing. And if that was because he had a shoulder problem, that's his fault. Then he should have pushed the fight back like they do all the time. They always are banging these fights and moving them back to other dates. He should have did that then. And it's funny you brought up the judging because I watched our boy Teddy Atlas going nuts about, I guess, a judge on one of the undercard fights.
Right.
During the fight, they showed a picture of the judge like on his phone or something, like not paying attention to the fight at all. And your boy Teddy was just going off about this judge. Like, this is an embarrassment. This is why everybody has a problem with the sport. He's going crazy that this judge was looking at his phone instead of watching the fight he was supposed to be watching and judging it.
Yeah, I heard all about that judge. I think it was a fight it was not on that card.
Not on that card. It was in Europe.
Okay. It was in Europe, somewhere in England or something it happened. And the guy was on his phone while he was.
I mean, honestly,
while the fight was going on. and everyone just freaking out on this guy. And I'm sure Teddy freaked out on him as well. All right, so I don't know much more. The second round is when he said, it was not the fourth, it was the second, that he said the shoulder got injured again, like that it came, that it like really got bad in the second. So he had a pre-existing problem, double injections, had to tell the doping agency. Well,
should have stopped the fight then. Should have stopped the fight.
Should have never fought.
After the second round and said, I can't go any longer. I'll see you in 6 months. All right, we'll do it again. We'll dance another time. That's okay.
Should have stopped. He didn't do that. He fought him, and then he never did anything from the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. And then in the eighth round, he came alive. 9, 10, 11, he won without a doubt in my mind. He threw a lot. He hurt Lopez a couple times. But in the 12th round, Lopez dominated from start to finish. That was that. 3 minutes, he just beat his ass. He landed a ton of shots, jabs and straights and overhands. Bottom line was, the guy won the 12th round, the money round, game over, and it was over. And he won the fight without a doubt. But 11 to 1, she's crazy. 119-109 was terrible, but the other ones were more in line with what it was. And the bottom line is, there is no controversy. You can talk all you want about your bad shoulder. You can talk all you want about Julie Letterman, but the reality is you got your ass beat by a lethal, violent, talented young boxer. Teofimo Lopez is no joke. I bet on him plus 330. All week I told you on Coast to Coast and Pearl on the Bench, this guy can do it. He can beat him. He can beat anybody. He can fight anyone, and he is dangerous no matter who he fights. I think he can be beaten. But I think that he is in every fight. Every fight I've seen him fight, I've seen him fight live 5 times. He knocks guys out. So now that he's beaten the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, what does that make him? I think it makes him dangerous. He is one of the best fighters in the world right now. That's all there is to it. You can say whatever you want about shoulders, judges. He's got 4 belts at 23. And he is a bad mother Forreller, trust me you. And believe me you when I tell you that his punches hurt Lomachenko. Lomachenko's face is not the true story of what happened in that fight, because he roughed up both sides of his eyes, and his face was swollen purple. But the key for me in the fight was the body shots, Carver. He landed so many body shots. He just aggravated his liver and his ribs. He just cranked him so many times in the body. And one low blow even for good measure. But I thought Lopez won the fight on the body more than anything striking the face. I thought he just abused him with the jab and in the body. And I did want to talk about Kyler Murray with you. We've been talking earlier about Tua starting, and now I just want to say, I just want to reflect back, because you weren't on last night, but I had, you know, Arizona winning the game, and at the time I took the bet, you know, when it opened up, I was laying 2.5, and then when it was, I think, game time, they were getting one, so it didn't matter to me. They won 38-10. And in my world, it was 38-3, bottom line. They gave him a garbage goal. And then, you know, bottom line, I think this Kyler Murray guy throwing bombs, running all over the field, like he was like a ghost. You couldn't even find him. Like the Cowboys were spun around. They had no clue where that guy was. He had so many moves. He was breaking ankles, spinning heads, making people dizzy. I was dizzy watching him running around. Like his game and his moves are phenomenal. And you can say whatever you want. The guy throws a bomb to Christian Kirk. Boom, 80 yards. Kenyon Drake, a 69-yard run. Hopkins, a 60. Nook had the 60-yard play down to like the 5. That team has the potential with that quarterback and those receivers to be in any game. It's the defense. You have to get that defense going. And once they started making picks and stealing the ball from Zeke, they were very dangerous last night. I think they're a much better team than anybody thinks they are. I think Kingsbury's got great play calling ability. They got a wide open, crazy offense. I think they're exciting. I think that Kyler Murray is way ahead of the curve in terms of where he is from year one to year two. Is that where he is about year two now?
Yeah.
This guy's a freak. He's a freak.
No, he is a very exciting player. He's got a new weapon now, having Hopkins there. I just need to see still, you know, I need to see it every week to put them in that in that next level. Because here's the thing for me. They whack Dallas. Look, Dallas is what they are right now. They're giving up 40 points a game to everybody. Right. They whacked the Jets the week before that. Jets suck. They're the worst team in the league. The Cardinals have lost at home to the Lions. They lost to Carolina. They beat Washington at home. Now, the week one, they beat the Niners on the road. That was before the Niners got hurt and everybody got banged up. I give them all the credit for that one. I'm interested to see this week at home, Seattle coming to their place. I want to see it from Arizona this week. Show me that you're taking that next step and not just beating up these turkeys like the Cowboys and the Jets. I want to see it from Kyler this week against the Seahawks.
Fair enough. I think that's a dead on. But I have to say, like, when it comes to second-year guys, I think, great. You know, because I'm not saying they're winning the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that they're going to the NFC Championship game. I think he is ahead of the curve. I think that he's showing great smarts when he's in trouble, just throw the ball away. And I mean, right on the ground, he'll throw it right into the ground, or he'll throw it out over the sideline. He'll do whatever it takes to not get caught. When he runs the ball, he slides better than any guy I've seen. All these other guys, Burrow takes way too many shots. Way too many shots. This kid doesn't take shots. He's just like too quick. He's too fast. He gets to the ground really quick and no one hits him. When he runs, no one hits him because he's too fast for everybody. I think that's what I noticed. He's like Lamar Jackson in the sense that Jackson's bigger and all this, but the way Jackson runs and breaks ankles, this guy Murray does the same thing. He can run and break ankles as good as anybody. We'll try to hook up with Morenci next on the bench. All right, Morenci's up next with Sports Rage. I want to bring Gabe in. Obviously, the Dodgers kicked the Rays' ass tonight, but I kind of want to get your opinion more on this story about Lomachenko having shoulder problems for 6 weeks leading up to the fight, multiple injections. Says he had to tell the commission that he was injecting for his injury. And then in the second round of the fight, he got injured, and he said he fought the whole fight with his shoulder going to fall off. And then he had surgery on the shoulder after the fight. And then his corner and his management have said that Julie Letterman fixed the fight with 11-1 in rounds. What do you think of Lomachenko getting his ass beat by Lopez and then coming out with this whole story about his shoulder? Is it worse than Pacquiao against Mayweather?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm actually friends, very good friends, too. Not just, you know, people say I'm friends with, but I used to do a show with Lomachenko's cut man. So not his father, obviously, you know, his campus, his family, etc., but his cut man, Russ Amber. Used to be the trainer of Otis Grant and Howard Grant, etc. World champion trainer. So he did not tell me. I spoke to him, but it's not something, you know, that he was gonna, you know, he would bring up to me before the fight. Man, that was a dominant performance, Scotty. I watched the fight. Although you can tell something wasn't right, yet if it's that bad, right, you postpone the fight. So I always take it. It always leaves a bad taste in my mouth when fighters say, I don't have any excuses, but, and you hear that a lot in the UFC as well, right? I don't have any excuses, but a lot was going on in my life, man. All right. That's what you hear often.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem himself, right? He really didn't.
No, he did not. But I will say that there's nothing worse than the guy that tells you about all of his problems and injuries after the fight. There's nothing worse. And you're right. He should have canceled. Carver said the same thing.
Scotty,
cancel the fight. Don't fight.
He's going to retire. Or
yeah,
the guy that
retire.
Says after the fight, I'm going to retire when you don't know that before.
Yeah. Well, Carver Hyde said the same thing. They should have canceled the fight. I'll see you tomorrow on Coast to Coast at 4. Have a great show. Great job, Carver Hyde. See you, Morenci. Night,
ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Moro Casino, America.
like a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.